Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
I beg your pardon?
Sitting with your backs to each other like two strangers waiting for a transport. That's supposed to fool me.
Oh, I just can't win. Look, there is nothing to fool you about. Really, I swear.
Liar.
What the hell are you doing?
I'll kill you!
It's too late! I'm betting your hair pasta already did the trick!
Janeway to Lieutenant Paris and Mr. Neelix.
Go ahead.
Yes, Captain?
Please report to my ready room right away. I have something important to discuss with you.
Captain, did you say right away? If we could have...
That's what I said, Mr. Paris. Janeway out.
Anyway.
Yes!
Neither here nor there.
Neither here nor there.
Okay.
Neither here nor there.
Are you all ready?
I am all ready.
Oh, excellent. Shall we talk like this for a bit?
No.
Shall we start the podcast by talking like this?
No.
You don't think that this would be just a grand way to start the podcast?
No.
No. Everyone would be so terribly amused, I should think.
I'll kill you.
We have a great episode, I think. Tonight, we don't know.
Wait, we didn't introduce ourselves.
We're getting there. I'm getting there.
Oh, so you introduce at the end of the podcast.
No, 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 no. We're not doing anything so radical as that, Dan.
Radical.
I don't know. I can't promise that this will be a good show. It feels like it's going to be a good show, though, because of the episode that we're covering. And we're the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Set a course for planet hell, Commander.
And we are welcoming you to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Prepare to take evasive action if necessary.
I'm welcoming you. My name's Patrick. I'm joined by Dan.
Hey.
My name's Dan.
My name's Dan.
So Dan's over here.
My name's Dan.
My name's Jesse.
And I'm Dan.
Jesse, who is the other regular host here at the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Yes, Patrick, what? My name's Jesse, and I go like this. Oh, blah, 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 blah. I'm Jesse. I go like this. I'm Jesse. Look at me.
Not the best entry point for new listeners. Style opening. So Dan is pretending to be Jesse, and Jesse is pretending to be Dan. They're both joining me. However, I only even brought that up because Jesse is joining us remotely because he got a bad case of the vid.
Come on.
No,
suck
not
in
bad.
Some of those hearty vapors.
He is just
that bad.
He's just riddled with vid.
With vid.
He's riddled with the vid.
He's riddled with vid and company.
He's
vid,
all
vid.
Vid and company, otherwise known as vid and co.
Yeah, he's like that
Viddle.
Video game.
Vid co.
The video game kid vidorous.
Vid co. He's got vid co.
Yeah,
kid
Jesse's
vidorous?
Jesse's all contagious kid. And it's gross. So he is sequestered in his own domicile, and he's joining us remotely.
Kittle vids.
But
Jesse's got the Kittle vids.
Okay, we gotta stay on track here. Last week's episode was all over the place and crazy.
So
this week is going to be a much better episode. we're gonna have all our ducks in a row.
Liar.
Because we're talking about a really interesting episode of Star Trek Voyager. Star Trek part.
Every time I say the title, I always think I'm pronouncing it wrong, even when I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Parturition. Okay, we'll give it all. Let's all give it a try. This is Star Trek Voyager season 2.
Are we saying it at the same time?
Episode 7. No, I'll do it, and then you do it, Dan, and then Jesse. Okay.
Par.
No.
At the same time, you
no,
said right.
I did not say it at the same time. Parturition.
Okay, now it's my turn.
Okay.
Parturition. You bastard!
Parturition.
You subclass genius.
Parturition.
Jesse, how do you think it's said, Jesse?
Parturition?
Sure. I mean, when he says it, it sounds
like I think
normal.
So.
Yes, parturition. Jesse pronounced it correctly. Star Trek
Voyager. It's an unusual word.
Parturition.
It is an unusual word. It means to the act of giving birth. Mm. It's a bit pretentious, if you ask me. But anyway, we'll be discussing that episode.
Nothing happened.
Momentarily, after we go through the regular podcast front matter, which we will go through.
I hate when you say front matter.
Swiftly, we will go through with alacrity so that we can get to what will no doubt be a robust conversation about parturition.
I beg your pardon.
All right. So first, we need to remind you all to check out our Patreon.
Why?
If you've got extra dollar bills, extra yen, why? Extra lira, extra pounds, extra kroner. Extra shillings, if you,
why?
You know, in Austria a few decades back.
Why?
Any extra cash that you want to throw our way. You can go to the Patreon. I'm trying to tell them why, Dan. The why is
get on it.
We have a lot of bonus content over there, some of which is pretty good. There's free previews, but the best way to root through all that bonus content to see which ones are the good ones is to just pay us a nominal fee per month. And yeah, that's at patreon.com/itsgotstartrek.
Okay. Oh, come on, play something.
Well, we can also note that we are recording on past tense day.
What?
We're recording on past...
I beg your pardon?
On past tense day. You didn't know, Dan, that today is past tense day?
Is that why kids got off school?
Jesse, did you...
Jesse, I knew that.
Jesse, did you know that we're recording on past tense day?
Yeah, August 30th.
Yeah, past tense day. August 30th, 2024, from the Star Trek Deep Space Nine two-parter, past tense.
I think I'm in love.
Now, you can go check out our coverage of past tense in episode 28 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Oh, sounds like a challenge to me.
Which reminds me, do you know what episode this is?
257.
Close. This is episode 254 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. So we discussed past tense in episode 28. So I haven't listened to that episode, I was about to say in a while, but probably ever after editing it. It's probably rough. Early on in the podcast, I do remember being very
sorry.
I remember being very angry about sort of the what was going on in the US at the time. So
really?
Yeah,
I think it was sort of an angry discussion we had. I don't know how fun that discussion was.
Is that one where we brought up Fox News?
No, I don't think so. I think that was earlier in the podcast.
Earlier in that same podcast?
No, earlier in the course of our podcast, the It's Got Star Trek podcast, the podcast you are currently on.
You weren't very clear when you said that.
Well, I've just clarified it.
How do you, that's an assumption right there.
Okay, I attempted to clarify it. All right, Dan. All right. Okay. Next up. I said alacrity. That's what we're approaching the show with this week.
With a lacquer tree?
With alacrity.
A lacquer tree? Where do you find these lacquer trees? Are they near the pepper trees?
All right, Dan, this is on you, the next bit, because we made a request sometime in the last few weeks. We were hoping to generate reviews, you know, rate and review and all that jazz.
Because we want people to pay attention to us.
Well, mainly we don't ask that often, but we do like to bring it up every now and then because it does help the podcast, particularly, unfortunately, it's ideal on Apple Podcast or iTunes, whatever they call it these days. But wherever you
Apple
like,
Podcast.
You know, if you can give us a review, that's excellent. And Dan, in order to help incentivize people to craft us some reviews, said that for every review that gets posted, he would create a bespoke non-AI generated haiku. Bespoke non-AI generated. He's not going to use ChatGPT or any of these things. Gemini, none of that.
I know.
He's going
to
come up
with
these haikus himself. So we got two excellent reviews.
What good fortune.
So Dan has two haikus.
Yeah.
To review.
All right.
To review. Two haikus.
And now that's
that was my intro.
That's the sort of indicator. Yeah, I'm putting it down. You pick it up and you just sort of run with it.
Okay. Well, we got our first review from Mr. David Joseph Moody, who we all know and love from Let's Talk About Treks.
Yes.
We here are big fans of David Joseph Moody, and he wrote a review. We will not read them because we discussed it and felt it was tedious to read the reviews.
Even though, I mean...
Maybe it's tedious that I'm talking about the fact that we were talking about...
David's review is really sweet and really, 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 really wonderful. We really liked it, yeah.
So here's haiku number one. Now, I'm new at this, so I'm still workshopping my style here. Right. So I have to... Oh, man, that's a sign of lack of confidence when you qualify something. Like, I should just go bust into it and just be like, I'm great at this.
You fucked it up.
I fucked up the first rule of show business.
Yeah, we started out so well with all the goofy British voices, and now we're just fucking shit up left and right.
Okay, here it is. This is based on David Joseph Moody's name that he put for his review, because different people put different names for their reviews.
Some people use a handle.
Yes.
Some people use their
A lever. A lever. A handle.
Mm. Is this haiku going to have a pun in it, too?
I don't know.
I mean, you should know because you wrote it.
I never thought about it that way.
Okay. Well, you read the haiku and let us know.
Here we go.
We'll figure it out.
Journey of auras. Ocean deep in baritone. Breathing with knowledge.
Okay, that's pretty good.
There you go.
Now, you're relying on the fact that, of course, you're familiar with what Mr. Moody sounds like. So, anyway, that's great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, David Joseph Moody, for the excellent review. We appreciate that.
Thank you so much.
What's the next haiku? And who is the review by?
The next review is also a very nice review. And that the name they used there was Drew BK. Drew BK.
In the UK.
In the UK.
Because I thought it was Drew UK, but you said no, it's Drew BK.
Drew BK.
BK. But Drew BK is in the UK.
Drew BK in the UK.
Do they have BKs in the UK?
Burger King? Yeah, they do. I remember I was there. I was at Oxford in 1996 during the height of the mad cow epidemic. And because I was a teen with a teen mind, I thought it was hilarious to keep going to Burger King and get hamburgers.
You don't even like Burger King that much.
I like Burger King just fine.
No, but I mean compared to other burger joints.
Yeah, probably go to McDonald's before I go to Burger King. Mm. I might go to Burger King before I go to Wendy's.
Oh, you kidding me? No, I mean,
I like Wendy's just fine, but sometimes the square burger... I find it a little pretentious.
I feel like all fast food has been lacking lately, except for Taco Bell, but that's just like taco stuff.
Yeah, well,
but like burgers, I've lamented this before, but like recently whenever I've gotten a fast food burger, it's been like rubbery and gross, floppy, and only one time I remember getting a quarter pounder with cheese at McDonald's on a Sunday afternoon, and it was steaming. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. I was like, this tastes like a real fucking burger.
It was like an after church burger.
As an after church burger. I woke up after church had ended. I woke out of bed, and then I went to McDonald's. All right.
Good for you.
Well, what's that fucking haiku?
Okay, well, it's interesting, the topic you guys chose to talk about.
All right.
This is about Drew BK. Meat at Dominion, Burger King with beefy nights of patty or loaf.
All right, so there we go.
Oh, man.
So, you know, great minds think alike.
There you go.
I like that. And I hope we hope you like that too, Drew BK, not Drew UK, Drew BK in the UK. And for any of you, the rest of you people out there, I was about to say motherfuckers, but I guess we shouldn't be quite so aggressive this early in the podcast with the audience. We save that till later. Anybody else interested in writing a review, you'll get a haiku. Simple as that.
Write a review, get a haiku.
Write a review, get a haiku.
Free for free. What's better than free for free? I don't know. You know, I was wondering, the thing about the haiku that's tricky is like, I felt like I could have read either one of these in opposite order. Right?
Yeah. I mean,
so which sounds better?
They're bespoke, but maybe you mean like the lines in opposite order?
Lines in opposite order. Like, okay, the original for David Joseph Moody was Breathing with Knowledge, Ocean Deep in Baritone, Journey of Auras. Now if I reverse that, it's Journey of Auras.
That's actually how you read it. You started with Journey of Auras.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're right, I did. I'm sorry. You're right. Okay. So this I started with, okay,
you're inadvertently proving your point.
Oh my gosh. I did a dumb thing. This is how it originally was. Journey of Auras, Ocean Deep in Baritone, Breathing with Knowledge, versus if I reverse it and say Breathing with Knowledge, Ocean Deep in Baritone, Journey of Auras. Which is better? It's about the same.
Well, you've confused me now, so when you say flip it and reverse it, I don't know exactly.
Well, that's even better.
Which one's the first one?
Okay, so that's even better. Double blind study. Triple blind study.
Well, not quite, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah, so which is better? Journey of Auras, Ocean Deep in Baritone, Breathing with Knowledge, or Breathing with Knowledge, Ocean Deep in Baritone, Journey of Auras.
At first I thought the other one, but now I don't know.
Wait, what's the other one?
Exactly.
You got it. Jesse, what do you think?
I think the latter one is better.
The latter one.
The one about the ladder.
The one that ends with Journey of Auras.
Yeah.
Me to Dominion, Burger King with beefy knights of patty or loaf, or of patty or loaf.
Patty or loaf. Patty or loaf.
Hold on, please. Of patty or loaf, Burger King with beefy knights, me to Dominion. Now, is that better?
Beefy. I like the part where you say beefy knights.
So I should have said both of those in the opposite order that I did.
Totally.
How about everyone here at home, write us an email and tell me which order you liked better.
Okay. Write us at...
And then he'll write a haiku about that.
write us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com. Haiku order.
Or post on Twitter or Mastodon or something.
Yeah, you can get us on all the social media at It's Got Star Trek. Good. Okay. That's good. We got all that out of the way.
Nothing happened.
Now we can talk about the topic at hand. Parturition. The act of giving birth to young childbirth. Directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Oh.
Yeah, with a special guest star of the baby from that show, Dinosaurs.
Yeah, really.
Not the mama, not the mama.
Oh.
Not the mama, not the mama.
Yes, creepy, slimy monster puppet. All sorts of other business in this episode. Okay, so
So I want to say that the baby, they look much cuter than their adult version. Something happened to their face.
I know they look like long nosed and goofy.
Like, and they look like a little dinosaur as a kid, but as an adult, they turned more bird like or something.
Yes.
They were like bird lizards.
Lizard bird people.
They turned from lizard more lizardy to birdy. They as
look
they grew
more.
Up.
I have that in my notes as well. That they look more avian.
Avian.
They don't look like avian.
Avian spelled backwards is naive.
But
did you know that?
Well, we were talking about the end when we really ought to be talking about the beginning or even the pre. Even the pre-beginning bit. So, before discussing this episode, I just wanted to comment that this episode is like, there's like a weird Mandela effect thing going on, or a variation on the Mandela effect thing for me, because...
Are you sure not? You're not talking about a Molière comedy?
No, I'm talking about a Mandela effect or something similar, because I don't remember this episode. And what I mean by that is I remember the basic events, right? I remember Paris and Neelix coming to blows and then resolving their issues and having to team up and realize they like each other and that they shouldn't be jealous and all that other stuff. I remember that. What I don't remember is most of this episode. I don't remember this fucking title. I absolutely do not remember this title. And the thing is I watched Star Trek Voyager from the beginning when it was on air. And I've rewatched it multiple times since, from the beginning, every single episode. I know I haven't missed this episode, but something about this episode, as memorable as certain parts of it are, I think there's a leak in my brain because there's so much I didn't remember about it.
I think maybe your brain just rejected it because it was your standard, like, two people fighting over someone they fancy, and it's like, oh, but now they got to do a mission together. Oh, yeah.
And then there's a three men and the baby thing.
In the middle of it, we fucking get introduced to lizard baby, bird lizard baby, slime baby.
Sticky slime baby.
And when that thing comes out, it's like, whoa, wait, what the fuck? So it's like kind of like a little jarring.
It is a little jarring. And we'll figure it out as we go through the discussion. But yeah, I think it is probably something along those lines that this episode sort of feels like it's made up of pieces of other episodes of Star Trek and sitcoms and TV.
Almost like a primeval Earth.
Although, I enjoy the episode. I don't know. I really got a kick out of the episode, and I think part of it is because Tom Paris and Neelix are kind of fun together.
You know what I liked better, even better than that though. It was not featured in the episode as much, but the dichotomy, to
quote Billy Madison, today, Junior,
the back and forth between Tom Paris and Harry Kim, I thought they were super chummy and friendly.
Well, and actually, and like, do you have that scene?
And like, Harry's like, "What else is new?" And he's like, "Oh," and like, Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you have that loaded up in Chakotea.net in the script? Because there was a quality to that back and forth that came out of like a 1960s, like a Gene Kelly film. I was like watching like Singing in the Rain or something. You know, it's like the specific patter they had.
Well, let's see. There's he goes,
I say you enjoy it.
That was him saying, that was Paris being all like, oh, what's going on with me, Harry? And then he's like, and then this is, he got, Paris goes like,
practice, Harry, practice.
Like, you're talking about like lines like that?
Well, yeah, sort of. But there was a specific exchange where Tom is revealing he's into Kes, where he's all like, you know, oh, I'm in trouble. You know, I can't paraphrase it because what I'm saying is based off of like the actual words. However, I neglected to write them down.
Wait, is it like this part?
I am attracted to Kes.
That one? But then there's like a back and forth that goes on.
Yeah, there's a back and forth even before that where he's like, I'm in trouble. And he's like, what kind of trouble?
Oh, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da. He goes,
I think I'm in love. What's new? With Kes.
Kes.
That one?
Yeah.
That was a good one.
Well, yeah, but it's that whole thing.
With Kes.
Going,
Kes.
You know.
Kes. 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 Kes.
I'll be in my ready room.
But it simultaneously took me out of the episode because it did not sound like two Starfleet people talking or friends. It sounded like the Music Man or something.
Yeah.
But I also enjoyed it because there was a rhythm to it. There was a fun rhythm to the back and forth, and it was relying on those tropes from that type of jive dialogue.
Paris goes, oh, come on, play something. Just pretend I'm not here.
Which is like Casablanca.
And then Kim plays like some kind of clarinet piece, and he goes, play something different. And he's like, different?
Yeah.
Something not so cheerful. Why? What, you don't take requests, huh? And then Kim's like, something bothering you, Paris? And then Paris is like, oh, Harry, I'm in trouble. Yeah. And Kim's like, what's new? Yeah. And Paris goes, mm-hmm. I think I'm in love. Mm-hmm. And Kim goes, what's new? Mm-hmm. And Paris goes, with Kes. And Kim goes, Kes? It goes, with Kes. Kes?
Yeah.
With Kes.
With Kes.
Kes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Paris like, I know. I never even saw it coming. I thought we were just good buddies. But there she was in my arms. And Kim goes, in your arms, Paris, you didn't. Paris is like, what? Yep. Oh, no, yep. I didn't. Yep. I wouldn't. I didn't. I wouldn't.
Yep.
That
see?
Part.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, he goes.
Jesse, didn't he do a great job acting that out?
It was really good, yeah.
Isn't it good Dan's always loaded up Chakotea.net, which is a repository for Star Trek scripts. And do they have other scripts as well?
Yeah.
Or is it just Star Trek?
I've actually never looked, but I bet they do. But be careful. It's only HTTP. It's not HTTPS. But
So you got to override that shit when you load it up.
When you go to
Chakotea.net, click override. We promise it's safe. Dan gives you his personal, professional promise that you won't get any sort of horrible, horrible computer viruses.
There's no forms you got to enter any
Trojans and worms.
There's no forms that you have to enter any data into, so you're probably fine. No passwords or anything.
Well, you're doing a search for the episode title, aren't you?
I guess so, but that's I mean, what people AI, gonna, people, people are gonna find out.
The AI could suss out your typing rhythm and style and reverse engineer it to take over your bank accounts.
Okay, but that's a new problem we have with our AI. We didn't have that problem before. He goes,
oh no, I didn't. I wouldn't.
That part? Yeah. I didn't. I wouldn't. She stumbled during a flight. Oh, yeah. Remember when they were getting all sexy during that flight simulation?
Yeah.
Well, I caught her.
That's how the episode starts.
I held her for an instance. Are you going to play or not? He goes, if you ask me, I'd say you'd enjoy it. Enjoy it. Only thing that makes sense. You've been doing the same thing to yourself your whole life, setting yourself up for rejection. You must enjoy playing the part. Cogent point.
Cogent point.
He goes, hey, don't knock it until you try it.
Hey, don't knock it if you haven't tried it.
I just have to be more careful. I can't let myself alone with her. Oh, this part too. There's an old Chinese expression.
This is a fun new game. Hey, Jesse, this is great. We don't got to do shit.
This part, Harry Kim goes, there's an old Chinese expression. Stay out of harm's way.
And that's not a Chinese expression.
Exactly. And here's what I thought was funny. After that, Harry Kim uses another trope. He says, if it works, use it.
Yes.
I thought Paris was going to be like, oh.
Now that's a Chinese expression.
Yeah, right. Something like that. Something along those lines.
Well, because it was very sitcom-y. Bantery. The plot of that conversation is sitcom-y. The rhythm of the dialogue is 60s screwball
and
comedy.
I think that when I was saying I liked their back and forth in this episode, it's specifically that scene.
Yeah, and me too.
And at the
when you said that made me think of that.
And we thought it together.
And we worked through it. And now you, me, the audience, Jesse, we're all on the same page.
Oh, man.
Even though Jesse is riddled with COVID, he's still together enough that he can comprehend what we're talking about.
Oh!
At the end too, even the way Harry like played music at him at the end, he like lifted his clarinet and put it up in their in his face.
Yes,
remember that? Remember when he did that?
Yeah.
Oh, sounds like a challenge to me.
Yeah, well, Harry can be a little aggressive with his clarinet.
And I can't even tell them how angry.
That's not the one I meant to play.
No, you're playing the wrong one, Dan.
playing the wrong one.
You're getting ahead of yourself.
I want to mention that I appreciated how well Garrett Wang played the clarinet, because he didn't. I even looked it up. I was like, does Garrett Wang play the clarinet? And the answer was, no, he does not. But he put in a lot of effort into making it look like he was pressing the right keys, which he did. If you watch a lot of like movies or TV shows where they're playing an instrument, more often than not, I would say, the notes they're hitting, like, don't match up at all with the music. Unless it's like a cutaway shot of someone's hands on a piano and not their face. But if you see the actor in the shot, doesn't look like they're playing the thing they're playing. But this one looks so realistic that I was like, maybe he actually can play. So I was appreciative that he put in that effort.
Does it aggravate you two being professional musicians, professional quality musicians? Does it aggravate you when you see somebody playing something incorrect on the television? I'd imagine it aggravate me.
It used to.
I'm not sufficiently schooled in instrumentation to really tell.
Well, it's not like it aggravates me. It just seems like there's a couple things they could do to put a little more effort in.
Right.
If they're playing the cello, when their hand moves like way up the cello board, when they're obviously playing the same note, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, that doesn't line up at all. So I appreciated that. I appreciated that big time in a big way. So, yeah. Palatine peas.
So yeah, all right. I guess we've determined that Tom Paris is a tomcat.
Mm-hmm.
Dan doesn't like that phrase.
Oh yeah, that's right. I don't like that phrase.
So okay, a little background here based off of things I read on Memory Alpha as well as some other sources that confirmed it was that the producers were getting a little sick of this whole like Neelix jealousy creepiness, right? It was just sort of getting tired.
Yeah.
And then he's had this sort of ongoing thing with Paris in particular, and that Neelix was sort of just coming off as an asshole.
Yeah.
You know? And also at the same time,
you say the producers are getting sick of it in the run of the show, or
in the run of the show? Yeah. Because throughout the first season, this was like a simmering thing that Neelix had this jealousy, but at the same time, he was also always being a comical character, and so they were like, we gotta like give him something a little less comical, a little bit more dramatic. Also, we have to like resolve this like asshole-y business, because it kind of comes off as like he's like a piece of shit. It's already weird that he's dating a 2-year-old girl. That's creepy. So they already have to like deal with that.
And you're only two years old.
And if on top of it, Neelix is this possessive asshole, that's just, it's unappealing after a while. Well, so I think they wanted to like sort of resolve that, with the other thing being that they also thought Tom Paris was sort of underutilized in the first season. They wanted to give him some more meaty stuff.
Well, apparently like people are still gossiping on like Tom Paris being a scoundrel. I didn't know that by the second season, because Neelix was like, people talk about you, you know, and I thought that, I didn't realize that people were still, I mean, they don't have a problem with Maquis controlling half the bridge, but like, but like they're talking about Tom Paris, like who was in some,
well, because I think Tom Paris was different than the rest. Remember, because they like pulled him out of that New Zealand prison.
Yeah, but we're talking about the Maquis.
I know, but didn't Tom Paris like sell out his friends or something? I forget exactly. Yeah. I thought he did something. He did something that was kind of like shitty, and then he's like atoning for.
Right.
I mean, we know it's because secretly he's actually Nick Locarno from that you know, the episode with Wesley and the
Nick Locarno
and the Balzacian Starburst. What
Balzacian.
Was it?
Balzacian.
I forget what it was called. When they killed one of their friends on accident.
You're only 2 years old.
I don't say on accident. It's an affectation I've taken up recently just for fun. But the problem is if you don't know me, you might think I'm saying on accident seriously, which is fine. It's fine if you say on accident. I think it's a perfectly acceptable thing to say. Normally, I would say by accident. That's how I was raised.
When I'm talking about vampires, to replace the word vampire with Dracula instead. So it's like I'm hanging out with a bunch of Draculas.
I like that too.
Yeah.
Although I'm often more pretentious than that, and I like using the Hungarian word umpir.
Yeah.
Exactly, because that's the reaction I'm trying to get. Just sort of like a curt exasperation.
No.
So yeah, Neelix. So we once again we have to, you know, talk about like
you're only 2 years old.
Like, so he's, do you notice he was all talking down to her when he was going away on the trip? He's
like, when I get back.
Yeah, he goes,
when I get back.
He's like talking to her like she's a child, right?
Yeah.
And okay, at one point, the doctor even points out to Kes that she's only 2 years old, hence that sound I play. And she might be too young and naive to experience the world the same way others have, which is why she didn't realize that Paris had a crush on her.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Voyager is admitting that Neelix is dating a child, and the implication is that it's gross. Like, if Voyager is admitting, because the doctor straight up says, you're young and naive, you're only two, you don't know the like things that normal adults know, you know? And on top of that, apparently Tom Paris is a space creep too. Because
he's all like, hey.
Yeah, right.
Well, let's go to the simulator room.
I'll be ready for anything next time.
Ho ho, sounds like a challenge to me.
Ho ho, you have that isolated?
Are you talking about this one?
Ho ho,
that?
Yeah, I enjoy that. I also enjoy...
Ho ho, sounds like a challenge
sticking,
to me.
Sticking to the pre-planned structure of the show.
Oh shit, I know what's coming up.
Which involves, among other things... The periodic break.
Table.
No, break, break, commercial break.
I thought you said periodic table.
All right. We will be back in a second. I'm not going to say it yet. And when we get back, we will continue this discussion. Okay. We will be right back.
When I get back.
Okay. Jesse, why don't you bring us back?
And we're
as soon
back.
As you're ready.
All right, let's try that again.
Let's try that again.
Jesse, why don't you bring us back?
And we're back.
Take us down, Commander.
How was that?
I mean, that was all right, I guess.
Do you want to do it again?
No. Do you want to
hey,
do
Jesse,
it again?
Hey, Jesse, do it again. Okay, ready? Jesse, go.
And we're back.
Hey, guys.
Oh, God, no.
Guys and gals and gals and guys.
No.
Guys and dolls. We're just a bunch of crazy guys and dolls.
Yeah. This planet hell sounds scary.
Yeah, no kidding.
Except it turned out to be less scary than it actually was.
Set a course for planet hell, Commander.
They're all like...
The people in stellar cartography have already nicknamed it planet hell. Planet hell.
They're like, this is planet hell. And it's like, they beam down there and they're all like, okay, here's the deal with planet hell. Here's what you're going to have to deal with. A mildly irritating rash.
Right. They did a pretty good job keeping that rash like going throughout the episode. They didn't forget about it.
Yeah.
Sometimes shows like forget about like they do. The thing they said.
From time to time.
But yeah, no. On occasion. But it also, they thought, the problem is though, is they thought it was going to have all this food and then really the food was in the air. So that was kind of hellish, right? When you're going to
food
a planet,
in the air.
When you expect food on a planet and you get there and there's no food on that planet, it's just in the air instead and you're breathing in food.
I've only been to one planet and it's got tons of food.
Yeah, it does.
But I understand what you're saying in principle. What was the stuff you needed to protect yourself from the fog? It was dermal osmotic sealant.
There was some kind of...
The Achmonics!
You had to...
Dermal Achmonic sealant. You remember the Achmonics from ALF?
No, I don't.
Remember we did that episode of It's Not Star Trek,
yes,
where we covered the first episode of ALF?
Yes.
That was really fun.
Yeah, it was.
And they have the Achmonics. Yep.
Okay.
The neighbors are named the Achmonics.
Technobabble.
Neelix said technobabble.
And it's protecting them against the trigemic vapors.
Yes, trigemic. I have that written down, too.
You don't have to impress me with your... Technobabble.
According to Memory Alpha, Technobabble was only spoken on Star Trek in this episode when Neelix says it, and then
Technobabble.
And then previously in Q-less on Deep Space Nine.
Starfleet Protocol. Technobabble. Starfleet Protocol. Junk. Junk. Starfleet Protocol. Starfleet Protocol. Technobabble. Junk. Junk.
I'm not joking, Lee. Okay. Kes is being...
I'm not joking, Lee.
I thought you could like that fits with
Starfleet Protocol.
Doing.
Starfleet Protocol. Technobabble. Junk. Junk.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Yeah. So, somewhere in there.
Somewhere in there.
Staccato is what I was thinking. Anyway,
It was hard because I had too much space at the beginning of the file, so I had to time my finger to hit it just before. Sometimes when I create beats, I try to shave as much empty space off the start, but when I'm doing a normal sound file that isn't a beat, I sometimes lead in with some silence or some background noise because it sounds, it's less jarring. Certain short phrases are jarring unless you lead it and end with a little bit of ambient noise. And so
you should start with the "it's not joking."
And so in this case, I was trying to make beat out of non-beat files, and it was difficult.
I think Jesse's suggestion is a good one. Did you hear Jesse's suggestion?
You were saying to use "not jokingly" in a beat.
It was to start with that.
Start with
it. If that's got the long, not tail. What do you call it? If the tail is the long thing at the end, what do you call it at the beginning? The long, is it like a
tongue?
The tongue, the beard,
the nose,
the cowlick. You know what a cowlick? You know, with the little goofy hair thing.
Yeah, not cowlick. Colic.
Not colic.
I'm not joking, Lee. Starfleet protocol.
I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not joking, Lee. Starfleet. I'm not joking, Lee. Starfleet. I'm not joking, Lee.
Starfleet
protocol.
Force inspiration.
Yeah.
Starfleet protocol. Starfleet protocol. Techno babble. Junk. Junk.
it's fine. Just the Neelix stuff is just fine. It was an experiment, a failed experiment. But you know, we have to explore these things for a time. Yeah.
Starfleet protocol.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Techno.
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 Not the mama. Not the mama.
Techno babble.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Techno babble.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Wait, one more time.
Not the mama. Not the mama.
Techno.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Whoa.
Techno.
I'm not joking, Lee.
Okay.
All right. Kes. Kes is like Neelix is being all weird.
Yeah, right.
Kes frequently gets annoyed with Neelix. She loves Neelix, of course, but this is
she
not
is very weird. Attractive.
Gross.
Yeah,
we often make fun of Enterprise for being particularly like gross when it comes to sexual politics, but yeah, it's true of all the Berman Treks. It rears its ugly head from time to time.
I think I'm in love. What's new with Kes?
Kes.
I am attracted to Kes.
She is very attractive.
So I can see where the producers were coming from when they were like, you know what? It's getting to be a bit of a pattern where Neelix is possessive and jealous, and it aggravates Kes, and she doesn't know how to deal with it, and it's a whole thing, and it makes Neelix not look so good. It's shitty. So I get why they wanted to resolve that, and that's what they end up doing in this episode. But it is also very interesting because we do get to see a lot of Kes, and we get to see a part of Kes that we don't see often, which is angry Kes.
Yes.
And angry Kes is upsetting Kes. It is really, really, she's really upsetting when she, because she's, Jennifer Leanne does a really good job of looking extremely pissed off.
And I can't even tell them how angry I am at them. And I may never be able to tell them how angry I am at them. Yeah. So it doesn't matter, does it? So it doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah.
It's pretty fucking intense.
I don't like it.
And I also sympathize with her because I'm like, yeah, like you love her as being a dickhead.
A douchebag.
And then you got this other guy who you just don't even realize that he likes you, even though he's like this Lothario. He's like this creeping Lothario who moves about the ship just smiling at people and being like, hey, I'm Tom Paris. Uh-huh. Although Tom Paris is not a peeping Tom. Do you know who the peeping Tom is?
No, I don't.
The doctor.
Oh, right. Yeah, the doctor, because he's all spying
on
people.
He's a peeping Tom.
Yeah, the doctor spies on people. Now, I guess he doesn't strictly say that he's using the camera
feeds. I am a doctor.
He's mostly talking
about
the audio feeds. But he then says voyeur, which I know, I guess, counts for audio as well. But
what? Oh, you're saying voyeurism counts with audio is what you're saying.
I guess it does. Yeah. I guess you can be a voyeur audio, even though you think when you think of the term voyeur, you think of looking over a fence or peering through that gap in the blinds outside of someone's house in the bushes where you put down some plastic so you don't get your shoes dirty.
So, I mean, yeah, so Neelix, they did kind of finally do something about the Neelix jealousy, but he kind of like went from, in this episode, from feeling insecure because he saw them walking together to like immediately to a jealous, violent, jealous rage.
Yeah.
Like it just showed him leaving the holo program, Tom Paris and Kes just joking around leaving the holo program. Yeah. And from that interaction alone.
Well, they look pretty flirtatious.
I had no right to push that pasta in your lap.
Like, he went straight from that to pasta in the lap to tackling each other, where there was some major
hair pasta.
Major ADR. Yeah, yeah, hair. Yeah, what? Where did he get all that hair?
All right.
Okay, so is Neil, I have a question.
We've got to pause the previous conversation because we do have to talk about the hair pasta. I know. We might as well talk about it right now.
And then, so first I want to clarify something about that. So is the deal with, because Harry Kim was talking about like how he saved up his credits by eating Neelix food.
Yes.
The whole deal with Neelix is that he makes food that isn't replicated. Yes. That's why they have him around, because he can make food out of anything.
Neelix gathers a bunch of trash and garbage.
Yeah.
And then he boils it up, and he's a scam artist. He knows it's shit, but he feeds it to humans. He feeds it to these people on the ship because they've all been fooled by him. I don't know
Space
how.
Creep.
I don't know how. Ever since the caretaker, ever since the pilot episode, when this guy shows up who's obviously a scoundrel, he's trafficking a young woman who's way too young to be dating him. He looks like a monster. He's scamming people out of water and shit like that. And now he's like, here, what I'm going to do, I'm going to scoop up a bunch of fucking garbage I found in the corner of my derelict ship, and I'm going to feed it to you people. I'm going to call it a Delta Quadrant delicacy.
So, yeah, so this hair, it was
hair pasta.
It was literal. It wasn't angel hair. It was literal hair.
Hair pasta.
That they found on a planet they landed on along the way. Is that the implication there?
Apparently. Yeah.
Like they went on some away mission to look for fuel, and Neelix went off and got a bunch of hair, and they ate a bunch of hair.
Yeah. Neelix found some hair.
Space hair.
Space hair for the
I'll tell you what happened, right?
Okay.
What happened is, so Neelix is presenting it as if it's some sort of special delicacy, right?
Right.
When in fact, when they went to whatever planet they were at, he went to the local bazaar, and in that bazaar, there is a merchant who sells a number of housewares, including pillows that happen to be stuffed with hair. Neelix bought a few of those.
Oh man!
Rips them open when he gets back, tosses that in the wok for a little bit because he seems to like cooking in a wok, and woks up some burnt hair and feeds it. Feeds it to these poor people who have been stranded in the Delta Quadrant through no fault of their own.
Ugh.
Yeah, I agree. It's disgusting.
It is absolutely grosserino.
What do you think the hair pasta tastes like? And with the caveat that we'll back away from this humorous little aside we've had about burning hair, because we all know that's gross and nobody would eat that.
That's an order.
In the context of the show, it does appear to be some sort of tasty pasta looking
shit. It does look like some tasty pasta.
Frankly, it just looks like spaghetti.
I had no right to push that pasta in your lap. And Starfleet protocol.
So what do you think it tastes like? What would your guess be from what he described?
I can't even think about the flavor. I can just think about the texture and what it's like to chew on hair.
Some sort of extruded carbohydrates, some alien version of a hair follicle extruding a lengthy, taut carbohydrate that is boiled up. What do you think, Jesse? What do you think it tastes like?
I think so.
I don't even want to think about it.
What's your favorite pasta, Jesse, out of curiosity? Because that's not something I know. If you have one, is there a particular noodle that you like? Rigatoni, spaghetti, ravioli?
Penne,
oh, dark horse.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Dan?
I don't know that I have a favorite.
Macaroni?
I like tortellini, too.
Ooh, tortellinis are good.
Tortellini, does that really count, though? Because that's stuffed with stuff.
I don't know.
Ravioli's stuffed with stuff, but yeah. I think it still counts as a noodle.
I think you should limit it to pastas that aren't stuffed with things, because that's not fair. That's giving the other ones an unfair advantage.
I mean, not necessarily, because not necessarily. People don't always want stuff in their pasta.
I know, but still, like, I would say that people would I bet you more people in this world like ravioli than they like fucking penne, for example.
Well, okay, but that's not necessarily, that fact may in fact be true, but not necessarily because of the stuffed versus not stuffed. Just pointing it out there. I frankly probably agree with you if I had to guess, but just, you know, there could be other reasons why the penne is preferred or the ravioli is preferred over the penne, other than the stuffing.
Well, I'm not going to include the shape. The stuffing.
Some people might just be into square shit with little riffly bits.
I don't know what my favorite is. I like those thick spaghetti noodles that are beyond spaghetti. They're the round, thick ones.
Yeah.
And then also, I tend to like linguine.
Linguine. We forgot about linguine. I'm a linguine fan myself.
Like, what's the I like those fat noodles. Like whenever you get Thai noodles or whatever. Yeah.
Well, we're sort of entering a different sphere of things. Things get complicated when you start incorporating all the world's noodles.
No, I know, but my point being is that I tend to like the fatter, thicker kind
egg noodles, soba noodles.
I'm not a huge egg noodle. I'm not a huge egg noodle guy, but my point is that
sweet potato noodle.
No, but that's not my point. My point is not the type of like flavoring the noodle has or what it's made from. I'm talking about the shape, and I tend to prefer fatter, wider shape.
I like a good wide noodle, a nice stroganoff noodle.
That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, I'm with you there. All right, back to the old show. Back to the old, it's got Star Trek.
So Neelix...
Talking about paralization.
So Neelix, he does have good instincts about Paris, right?
He's totally right.
The problem is that he can't differentiate between things people can control and things they can't. He's treating Paris like his feelings for Kessa are the same as him acting on his feelings. And there's two different things, which is why when they were chummy walking out of the thing, like... I don't know. Like, maybe, I guess Neelix was already skeptical of Paris because people talk shit about him. So I guess I can understand from that perspective. But really, I think Neelix, like, I don't know, being hyper aware yet unable to distinguish people's intention is a really bad combination.
What it is this episode is fundamentally about Neelix gaining some self-confidence with the help of Tom Paris, because. At the beginning of this episode and in previous episodes, the problem for Neelix is that he's insecure, and there's nothing that is less appealing than an insecure man. Mm-hmm. It just sucks. Mm-hmm. It's like the worst kind of person because it's just so sad. It's so depressing to look at.
We may have to resort to additional force.
And all the things that go along with it, where that insecurity, it doesn't just impact Neelix, it impacts those people around him, like Kes, for example, who he doesn't trust her. That's awful that he likes it. He thinks she's going to get stolen away by this guy. And then he also, you know, he has every reason to think that Tom Paris is attracted to Kes, but...
So it might be a wild goose chase.
He shouldn't necessarily assume that Tom Paris is going to follow through with that. And I think that's what Tom Paris tries to get through to him by the end of the episode, is like that he's not an asshole in that way.
So are you saying that I was unappealing at the beginning of this episode? You're saying I was insecure and unappealing? Calling me unappealing?
No. When you were
Is it unappealing? Do I sound insecure now?
No. Well, you're starting to, because if you're insecure about doing a haiku, that's not that you wrote. If you're insecure about publicly performing a set of haikus that you wrote, that's a different type of insecurity than thinking that your girlfriend's going to be stolen by the guy who's obviously hotter than you.
Yeah.
But you don't have to impress me with your techno babble. Starfleet protocol.
But yeah, I think that's what this episode is fundamentally about. It's helping Neelix obtain some measure of self-respect that he didn't have before. Now, you could argue that it sort of sucks that he was in a situation where he was lacking it, but it's whatever. Okay, maybe, we don't know. You know, he had a rough time growing up.
So there was a weird thing going on when they were eating those what kind of peas were those? Peas?
Do you know what type of peas they were?
It was some kind of pala peas.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Were they alien peas?
It was like Palantine peas.
With like
Palpatine peas?
With like some
Palpatine peas.
With some
I bet he does.
Makabo bread.
Makabo.
Makabo.
With the Leola root.
What was it? It was a Ractigino
Are you trying to look up that audio clip?
Ractigino. All extra sweet. Makabo bread, no crust.
Makabo bread.
All right. Yes. Okay.
Ractigino. Extra sweet. Makabo bread, no
crust. The Palantine peas.
Peas.
Eating goober peas. Goodness, how delicious. Eating goober peas. Did you see, there was a weird thing going on in that scene. When he went to pick up the peas, the music started, and it like went in on, and he was like making this like serious face. And then he went to Kes, and he gave her, put the peas on the table.
Yes.
And then it was, the camera was on his face. Yes. And then it went to her face. Like there was some kind of like monster.
She's like, something's weird.
It was almost like there was like some monster mutating off screen that we didn't get to see. Because like, she looked like she saw something creepy, and he looked like he saw, they both looked like they saw something creepy, or they both pooped
the Bilbo face.
They like pooped their pants or something like that.
Yeah, poop pants or Bilbo face.
But like, there would have been no reason for her to think something was up.
No, this was an awkwardly directed scene, and Jonathan Frakes, I think, does a great job with this episode, as he usually does with these episodes. But there were a couple awkward moments, and that one was one that threw me off as well, because I guess The clearest interpretation is because of certain body language hesitation that Neelix did. Something weirded Kes out.
But it came off awkwardly, is what I'm saying. Like,
yeah, I agree.
I guess that there was they were trying to convey something, but it was really clumsy.
And I'm just trying to describe what I think they were trying to convey, but I don't know for sure. But it's that Kes was weirded out by how Neelix was acting, and then Neelix recognized that Kes was weirded out, so then he was weird, and he did that weird smile thing, and it was just whole like, hey, I want the peas. Eat the peas. Everything's normal.
Both
know things are not normal.
There was this made-for-TV movie called I Know My Name is Michael or something, and it was about this kid that got kidnapped, and it was like...
He kept in a basement or something?
Yeah, or he was kept somewhere, and like the dude that kidnapped him was all like... like getting him to eat the peas, he's like, I don't want it. And he goes like, eat your peas. And I remembered that line and that inflection for my whole life. I think this movie came on when I was like 8 or 9 or something.
It's upsetting.
But the reason he only knew his name was Michael is because his parents didn't tell him his last name or give him his phone number. And so because of that, he was not able to like reach out when he got kidnapped.
Dan, can I just check something that may be sensitive, but I just wanted to check.
What?
Are you Michael?
No.
are you sure this was a TV show?
Whoa.
is that your real name, Michael, and that we've been calling you Dan?
I think so.
Improperly all these years? Because I didn't meet you until you were like, what, 13, 14, something like that? So you might have been living with those people for a while at that stage.
I don't know. It might have not even been Michael. Maybe it was David. I'm pretty sure it was Michael, though.
I think it might have been Michael. If you say it was Michael...
Is my name Michael? That's not my name. That's not my name.
So it doesn't matter, does it?
all right. Well, let's talk about the food fight, because as you were hinting at earlier, well, I guess you weren't hinting at it. You stated it explicitly, Dan. And well done.
Well done, sir.
Well done to you. You stated that so explicitly.
Well, wait.
The food fight was aggressive. The crescendo, the acceleration. I'm using the wrong techno babble, but you know what I'm saying.
They were using some major ADR when they were like rolling around on the ground. Yeah, like they were like calling each other things. He was like, yeah, you can't have my food. I wouldn't want your food or something like it wasn't. Those weren't the lines.
But
at all,
Neelix but starts it right. And then
Neelix starts everything. Neelix is being a dick this whole episode.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, Neelix starts it. But then it was just funny because you're like, okay, that's fucked up. And then Paris, because he's a child also, was just like, meh. It's like, oh, yeah.
Well, the whole time they went down to the planet, like, Neelix was like, all like, well, if you're going to burn, 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 burn. And then Paris is just like, okay, let's keep this professional. It's like, Neelix is like, okay, I'll keep it professional, but maybe you can't keep it. Burr, 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 burr. And then Paris is like, hey, chill out. Neelix is like, what? What? I'm just trying to do my job. If you're a meh, 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 and then Paris is like, okay, let's get this done. And then Neelix is like, well, I've been trying. That's all I care about. You know, he was doing that whole thing the whole time. You know what I mean?
Hey, Jesse, you know what's great? So Jesse's not here, so he can't see this, but and the audience at home can't see this, but you know how like earlier Dan was reading the script and sort of like acting out part of the show and reading the script? He had the script earlier. What he just did there... totally off the top of his head.
Yep.
Can you imagine?
Can you imagine?
I mean, it's fucking amazing.
Pretty great.
Yeah, especially to be like sitting here in the same room when that sort of thing's going on. It's really
cool. We may have to resort to additional force. Battle stations.
I like the food fight though, because I don't think we see that many food fights on Star Trek. I think they had one on Discovery, maybe. Did Discovery hit a food fight, maybe?
Hey, Jesse, do you remember that Digital Underground?
TOS had a food fight.
Did you remember that Digital Underground song called Food Fight?
How did it go?
It went,
kinda.
It goes, you gotta bring food to the food fight.
Yeah, yeah.
And he goes, I'll hit you in the neck with a cheeseburger.
Oh, yeah. I know that song now.
The Humpty says that part. He goes, I'll hit you in the neck with a cheeseburger.
I like how you're all like, hey, Jesse, do you remember? You weren't like, hey, Jesse and Patrick, because you were like, no, Patrick's not going to remember.
Oh,
that
man.
Shit.
Now you seem insecure.
No, you're. I'm saying you're correct. I wouldn't like, I mean, I remember that particular song, but only because I heard it through you guys.
You guys.
I learned it from you guys.
Well, I guess the only way to say it is to say it.
What a non-line.
Oh, yeah. It is kind of a non-line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. This episode is silly.
This episode is brought to you by Silly.
No, it's just silly.
With a capital silly.
It's fundamentally silly.
Is it so silly like the sports junkies call it silly?
No. That's are they still around, a local DJ group?
I think so.
Yeah. Anyway.
When they said things were silly, they mean it's good.
No, I didn't mean silly like that. I meant the episode is just sort of silly because it's... remember we talked about that funny dialogue with Kim and Harry? Mm-hmm. I mean, with Harry and Tom. And then
there was one.
And then there's this whole thing where it's like, oh, it just so happens that these two guys that just got in a fucking food fight over a 2-year-old girl that they want to fuck. Just happens that they
are only 2 years old.
That they're the guys that have to be called. They have to go on the mission.
They still have food on their shit when they get called down to the mission.
But they gotta go on the important mission. It's so convenient.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I was saying at the beginning, it's silly. It started with that classic scenario. There was also a silly moment where everyone gang dumped in Tuvok's mouth.
Wait, what?
What did you say? They were mean to Tuvok.
No, what word, what compound word did you use?
Gang dumped?
What in the world do you mean by that?
They gang dumped in Tuvok's mouth.
I presume this is a metaphor of some sort. Okay, I'll let you describe what you mean, and maybe I'll be able to suss out what you're talking about.
When Tuvok goes, I cannot guarantee success. My evaluation of their weapon system suggests a capacity equal to our own. However, and then Janeway's like, you've come up with an ingenious plan to neutralize them. And he's like, I have. In my analysis of our first encounter, I have detected what I believe to be a vulnerability in their shield configuration. There appears to be a slight phase retraction when auxiliary power is transferred to their aft weapon systems.
He's back to the script, by the way.
And then Chakotay says, a covariant phaser pulse into their aft control systems might disable their entire weapons array. And then Tuvok goes, that was my ingenious plan, Commander. You are correct. You see, both times, first Janeway dumped in his mouth, and then Chakotay dumped in his mouth. Because she interrupted him by saying, like, because Tuvok's like, hey, guess what? She's like, you got this great plan, right? That's what you're saying? Okay. And he's like, yeah. And then he's like, yeah, I do have a great plan. And then Chakotay's like, oh, is it your plan this? And he's like, yeah, that was my plan. They fucked him over.
First of all, you keep, when you're doing Janeway, you keep talking like you're doing Talking Heads or some shit. Some sort of like weird new wave, early 80s business. It's very,
I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, I'm curious to know what you're talking about.
You might just have to listen back. Because it's like, Janeway. In the doodle way,
you've come up with an ingenious plan. Because I don't want to like
I don't want to something die.
I don't want to character. Well, no, that you're not thinking of Talking Heads. You're thinking of the B-52s. Nah, that guy from Love Shack with your jukebox money.
Little B-52s. B-52s. You're right there.
You've come up with an ingenious plan to neutralize
the other
them.
The other thing I wanted to clarify
is I don't want to caricaturize Janeway's voice too much. I feel guilty when I do that.
Lieutenant Paris. I love Janeway's voice.
I do too, but sometimes
Kate Mulgrew's amazing.
But I have a tendency to be like, eh.
Well, because it's the caricature. It's, yeah, you're not commenting on the brilliant skills of Kate Mulgrew. Not at all. She's brilliant. We're having fun. This is a comedy podcast where we're having all sorts of fun.
What does that mean?
I like that. There's a lot of, I like this.
What does that mean?
What does that mean? What does that mean?
There you go.
What does that mean?
B-52s. But to clarify, dumping into someone's mouth, then to you, what I'm interpreting is when somebody else jumps in and says the punchline to a joke after you've said the setup. Is that what it is? You say the setup, and then somebody jumps in and they say the punchline, and you refer that to dumping in someone's mouth.
Not that specifically.
I just want to understand the colloquialism.
I'm trying to explain it to you.
Okay.
You ask me, and I'm explaining it, and then you're like, I just want to know. I need to know. I don't know what I do if I don't know. Please tell me. Well, Patrick, it's like, oh, I see. It doesn't make any sense.
Come on. Kids, calm down.
Oh my gosh. I think I got a head rush.
Yes.
It doesn't mean that specifically. Mm. It's like when a word can mean like a universe of things. So, but it does have to do in this case with speaking. Because at one point, Tuvok is about to like tell her, hey, guess what? And she doesn't bust his punchline, but she's like...
Bust his punchline. That's another new phrase. That's another fucking new phrase. I love it.
It's not specifically to jump in on the punchline, although that could be included among the set of activities that would be dumping in someone's mouth. Because Janeway didn't interrupt his punchline. Janeway just was like, hey, guess what I have? And she guessed what he had when he didn't expect her to guess.
Is that kind
of
like...
So I guess you could say answering a rhetorical question like unexpectedly or something that like sort of...
What about what we do when we interrupt you?
Yeah, like just right fucking then. Yeah.
Is that dumping in your mouth?
Oh my God, Jesse, why did you just dump in my mouth? Why did you...
You just busted his punchline, Jesse.
Okay, look. It's when somebody, like what Janeway did was she answered a rhetorical question in such a way as to interrupt the flow of his story.
Mm-hmm. The flow of his rhetoric.
That could also be considered dumping in someone's mouth, but it's not specifically interrupting their punchline. Jesse, you totally dumped in my mouth a minute ago. Why'd you do that?
I wanted to see if I could.
Are you mad at me?
No.
Jesse's mad at me. Now I'm insecure.
Dan's insecure, Dan. We're passing around the insecure stick. You know who doesn't need to be insecure? The people who look forward to our next break.
What's bad about it?
That was a very poor segue. Let's do something better, Dan. Come up with something better.
Why don't you come up with something better?
All right, Jesse. Send us the break, Jesse.
Are you going to send us?
I just did.
No. You got to say we'll be right back. That's the key thing, because otherwise people don't know that we'll be right back.
Listen, guys, we'll be right back.
Doing it in your mouth. I'm dumping in your mouth, Jesse. I'm dumping in your mouth. Or you can try that again. Are you going to try it again?
No, it's good.
Inertial dampers have failed.
All right, we are back.
Inertial dampers back online.
Yeah, all righty.
Hey, you want to play a quick game?
Okay. I feel like that's a rhetorical question right there.
Yeah.
Jesse, would you like to play a quick game?
Sure.
It's real quick.
Jesse and I are like, we don't think we actually have any agency in this matter.
Guess what part of the show this musical interlude is from?
Is that when they thought the baby was dead? that part of the episode they're just like, oh man. Baby's dead.
Did you notice that? Like, okay, so there was a reversal that went on. Remember I was talking about how Paris kept being like, Neelix, we just got to do a good job, and Neelix kept being like, oh yeah, well I'm doing my good job. Are you doing your good? I got an order. You remember when I did that thing?
Yeah.
And Neelix was being a dick. Yeah. There was a reversal that happened because when the baby came, Neelix started like really caring for that baby, and there was at least three separate times that Paris tried to abandon that baby on the planet, and Neelix kept being like, no, we're gonna save this baby. But Paris kept being like, fuck it, there's nothing we can do. Gotta leave the baby, because the baby's gonna die. And so I think that at that moment, there was a reversal happened, and then they became like godmother and god.
I became an uncle, and I'm a godmother. And I'm a godmother.
So you give up the transition with that I'll play it again. Jesse, do you got it?
I couldn't hear a goddamn thing.
Oh, shit. Well, I'll tell you what it was. It was the scene after Paris and Kes left the Holo program, and we saw Neelix's face turn sad.
Oh.
Or his Neelix was
so that's like right at the beginning.
Him. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Isn't that something?
That is.
Yes.
I thought that they had some really good shaky cam, both the shaky cam and the shaky cam acting when the shuttle was going down. When they were in the storm, it was super violent and scary, even though, I mean, you know, obviously they weren't shaking around, but I just thought, I remember, I think there was some recent shaky cam stuff that we saw that was a little silly looking. So this one looked good.
Yeah. I can't remember. I remember you talking about a silly, was that Enterprise? That was the shaky cam.
I can't remember Enterprise.
Starfleet Protocol.
Deep Space Nine.
Discovery.
It was a Discovery. Well, no, we talked about one recently. Yeah, I can't remember.
We talked about Discovery recently.
Mm-hmm.
Discovery season 5. Anyway, and I was going to say, this episode is kind of like when Odo and Quark crashed and had to climb that mountain.
Oh, yeah. I remember when they climbed that mountain.
Yeah, the ascent. That's a good episode. There's a lot of character development in that episode.
Mm-hmm.
There's like pseudo character development in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little character development.
Well, everything.
But it's more like Neelix became slightly more reasonable.
And it wasn't really development because they kind of flipped the switch, and that switch flipping was represented by the introduction of the bird lizard baby.
Yeah.
At that point, suddenly they were cool with each other. There was no real kind of like coming to like an understanding with each other.
Well, it's just the bird monster baby, the slimy puppet. The slimy,
yeah, I mean, I know
puppet.
It brought, gave them reason to get together.
Created the environment.
Yes, I know that, and that is one. But I'm saying that's one of the.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
they were not, lucky that happened.
I'm saying that is one of what maybe there should have been a couple more ingredients to that stew.
Yeah. Well, maybe if they were like starving and they had to eat each other, like they had to eat pieces off of each other.
And then
they dump in their mouths.
And then they got to eat the baby instead, and then they started to like each other.
Yeah. If they both immediately agreed that they'd have. So, okay. Alternative version of this story. I think this version is a good version.
That was so sad when the baby was dying. I think an
alternative version of this story is where Tom and Neelix, upon discovering the baby, both immediately agree that they should eat the baby.
Eat the baby.
But they both feel guilty about it, and so now they have this shared secret, and so that their friendship and their bond is a result of them both being embarrassed and feeling guilty at eating the slimy lizard monster baby.
I actually think that actually is a stronger plot story.
And then it might come up again in the seventh season, like, you know, where Neelix is saying goodbye, and Neelix all leans in and is like, "Hey, Tom, remember when we ate the lizard monster baby?
I think
it was so slimy."
No, I'm serious, Patrick, when I'm saying that I think that that is a stronger stronger character development than what happened in this. In this, it was just thing came. Yes, it brought them together. The audience understands why it brought them together, but there was nothing else to it. There should have been some
more things. You know, there was one other ingredient, and that ingredient was
love.
No, it was that the alien ship, because we haven't even talked about like that alien ship that just shows up with the lizard people, right? Mm-hmm. The actual lizard people ship, you know, the little CGI ship.
That was just
ship.
Like a life or death thing. They didn't want to die.
Yeah, but I mean, it's still another ingredient to the story where the thing preventing them from being rescued. You know, they keep adding these barriers. They're like, oh, we've got this weird atmosphere thing, and this other thing. Now we have this, like, you know, the aliens come and we have to deal with them, and they didn't know what to deal with.
Yeah. Who do you think puppeted that baby?
According to Memory Alpha, I was reading...
It wasn't Jim Henson-y, but it looked Jim Henson-y.
It looked Jim Henson-y, and I forget if it was... I don't know. Ethan Phillips, I think, was the one talking about it. He was in some interview in some magazine. Somebody was asking Ethan Phillips about that, and he said it was a team of like 8 puppeteers. It was made. There were cables in it, so it was like a rubber puppet with some cables. And he said it was really realistic. But the thing is, when you look at it on the TV again, it's a silly episode, and it looks both really high quality and particularly silly.
Okay, here's the actual lines when I was talking about how Paris was trying to be reasonable and Neelix was being a jerk about it. Neelix goes, "You're the commander of this mission. You can make any suggestion you want. And if you make it an order, I'll even have to obey it." And then Paris is like, "My suggestion is that we put our personal problems aside until this mission's over, okay?" Okay. And Neelix is like, "I left my personal problems back on the ship. I can't speak for you." And then Paris is like, "Fine, let's get the job done." And Neelix is like, "You got us down in one piece and I'll make it from there." And there's more, but we don't need to read it. You get the point, though. Neelix is being all snoofles. Snoofer butt.
He's being super snoofer butt.
He's being super snoofer butt.
This whole episode is Neelix. Neelix the super snoofing. Super snoofing burfing burf.
And what was with this fucking line?
"Your world must have very dry literature."
That's the weirdestly red line.
Well, it makes perfect sense.
I know. It makes sense. The line makes sense. Yeah. But the way he... there's
play
like,
it again.
There's some...
Play it again, Dan.
"Your world must have very dry literature."
"Your world must have very dry literature."
Your world must have very dry literature.
And this one I played earlier.
"What does that mean?"
It's like a weirdly... These lines are like presented weirdly.
Yeah. "What does that mean?"
"What does that mean? What does that mean?"
"Your world must have very dry literature."
"What does that mean?"
"Your
world must have very dry literature." "What does that mean?"
I don't know if it's because they're out of context, but I certainly agree you've presented evidence here, oral evidence.
Evidence!
Oral evidence.
Oral.
That I find convincing that they do sound like weird rhythms, weird
Emily
cadences.
Blount.
I never noticed this before.
In context, it did for me, because that's part of the reason I pulled them out, because even in context, I was like, this says fucking weird line reading.
Weird line reading.
You know what I'm saying?
I do.
Oh, remember when Kes gave the doctor an awesome look when he suggested that she's grumpy because she's hungry? he was all like, you missed lunch. Maybe that's why you're all pissed off. And then she like had this super frowny face.
Oh, yeah.
And it was awesome.
And he immediately recognized, unlike Kes is not able to recognize that Tom Paris was into her, but the doctor was immediately able to recognize, like, I said the wrong thing.
Right.
I am not being helpful to this person and with the particular thing that they're dealing with at the moment. The reptile monster baby looks like Robin Williams.
What the fuck?
He does. Google it. Google, just type in Voyager.
What does that mean?
Parturition monster baby Robin Williams. Actually, don't even put Robin. Just put the monster baby and you'll see.
Would anyone care to explain?
No, I mean, you got to look at the picture. You should be looking up the picture. I can't be looking up the picture for you.
So it doesn't matter, does it?
Are you telling me really actually look this up?
Look up the picture.
Oh, God.
The monster baby looks like Robin Williams.
So I look up parturish. I can't believe I'm fucking indulging you on this.
Well, you know.
Robin Williams.
I'm pretty charming when I want to be.
Parturition, Robin Williams.
No, just put in the alien baby or the reptile baby.
Alien baby.
Look for like Star Trek reptile baby.
Just brings up Mork and Mindy.
Because you put Robin Williams. Put the reptile monster baby.
Oh, you're just telling. Oh, you.
Search for the reptile. No, you don't need to search for Robin Williams.
I thought you were saying there's a side by side picture on the internet of Robin Williams and the baby.
Not yet. I've got to make one, or one of our listeners.
Well, you're just telling me to look up a baby.
I want one of our listeners to find a picture of Robin Williams and a picture of the baby monster from this episode, and to put them next to each other because the baby looks like fucking Robin Williams. I promise you. I'm not going to look up the picture, though.
You know, the adults look more hideous than the babies. We already talked about that, though.
Yeah, they do.
They look
really,
like...
They're really fucking... Quite
okay,
awful.
So...
Quite
they,
awful.
So, at the end of this episode...
Nothing happened.
Like, they didn't, like, get anything from this planet in the end.
They got a rash.
They got a rash. But why couldn't they take that food gas and turn it into, like... inhale the food gas to like get sustenance.
I wasn't 100% clear on this whole on the whole thing. I guess it was because it was technobabble, and we've mentioned this before.
Technobabble
about Voyager is that Voyager is sort of late stage technobabble. When they get to Enterprise, they realize they're like, okay, we got to pull back hard on that because Voyager went. Over relied on it sometimes, and sometimes it's charming. It can be fun. It's actually part of what I like about Voyager is that it did go so hard into
the
world. It's the epitome of the world building up to that point in this era of Star Trek with TNG, DS9, and then Voyager. So the techno babble is part of that, but especially on rewatches, you start to realize you're like, okay, they're just using a bunch of fucking gibberish, and it's not like it used to be where it was just a shorthand to say, okay, mm-hmm. they're using some future tool. It's now driving whole chunks of plot where you're like, okay, I gotta like sort of pay attention and parse this shit out, and yeah, so that happens a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think, kind of, I was, long story short is, I think I was tuning out when they started jabbering on about this fucking fog.
Yeah, the trigemic vapors or whatever. And there was
I was just like, oh, it's planet hell.
And there was a scene.
Planet hell.
There was a scene, this isn't strictly technobabble, but it was
Strictly Come Dancing.
When they're trying to figure out how to beam the shuttle out when it's time, but they need to wait for a break and all the interference.
Yeah, like always.
Always. Like, really? So Chakotay says, there's no way to know how close they'll be to the window when it opens. And Janeway asks for recommendations. And then Torres goes, take the ship. She's like, I know. Take the ship through the window into the atmosphere. The closer you can get us to the surface, the better our chances for a successful beam out. Now, she says that and Janeway reacts like if that's some kind of profound thing she said.
Profound.
But essentially, she just said, hey, let's get closer to it. And maybe we'll have a better chance of beaming them out.
Yeah.
See what I'm saying? Like she like they all acted like it was like this big discovery she made, but it was just like get closer and you'll have a better range and then you can do it better. It wasn't fancy.
It's a very good point. It's like come on.
Come on.
I agree. I agree with you.
B'Elanna's working on the transporter.
B'Elanna's on it.
B'Elanna, our shuttle's in trouble. Any progress on modifying the transporter?
B'Elanna's on it.
B'Elanna's on it.
B'Elanna, our shuttle's in trouble.
So the shivering monster baby.
Oh, that was sad too.
Was really upsetting.
Oh man!
And again, it looked like a Jim Henson puppet, all cute, but also it was shivering.
Yeah, it was a baby shivering because it was miserable and dying.
It had to be put in a blanket.
It was like on its back, and it was like. because it couldn't eat.
And then there was some, was it Tom Paris talking about feeding a bird with an eyedropper? And it's
He used the hypo spray to spray the food air into its mouth.
I like that they came up with a solution. I like that in principle. What I didn't like, because I've read that you're not supposed to feed a bird with an eyedropper, at least not if you don't know what you're doing, because you just drown them. That a lot of times people think they're rescuing a bird and they try to feed it with an eyedropper, but they put it down the wrong fucking tube because bird throats work differently.
Don't they say that like you're not supposed to throw rice at weddings because the birds eat it and their stomach like explodes?
Yeah,
something.
And also it sucks to get hit with rice, like even if you're not a fucking bird.
Get that shit in your eye.
You don't need to be getting some rice in your fucking...
Our shuttle's in trouble. B'Elanna, our shuttle's in trouble.
Is that a funny line?
B'Elanna, our shuttle's in trouble.
That's another funny line. That's
a funny line.
B'Elanna, our shuttle's in trouble.
B'Elanna, our shuttle's in trouble.
I love our that. Shuttle's in trouble.
Did either of you guys see the musical Troubable in Zerubbabel?
I'm unclear if this is some sort of joke.
No, it's not. Jesse, have you ever heard of the musical Troubable in Troubable with Zerubbabel?
Jesse has fallen off the call because you might not have noticed, but at one point I saw a giant COVID crawling right up his back.
Oh man.
And it grabbed him on the face.
How long ago was that?
I don't know. It was a while back. So
what are we gonna do?
Well, what are we supposed to do? Jesse's he's fallen offline. What are we gonna do?
Is he gonna come back?
I'm sure he'll try to come back. If he can fight off the COVID, he'll
should we contact him?
No, I've already contacted him via chat.
Okay.
So we're good.
Oh, I didn't realize that that's what you were doing. I thought you were I was just boring you.
No, you weren't boring me. You're a hilarious, awesome guy.
Aw.
Okay, but anyway. What the? Is that Mozart? Sounds like Mozart.
I don't actually know who that is.
I think that's Mozart.
This is the second one.
If Jesse were here, he could probably tell.
Yeah, us. I know, but he's not.
Even though Jesse doesn't like it.
Play something different.
Jesse doesn't like Mozart. The main point of contention I have with Jesse. Jesse and I have it together. I'm a Mozart guy. I think he's more into Bach and Brahms. I mean, to each their own and all that.
And then suddenly we fell into a subspace anomaly.
I had that as part of the same clip. Speaking of things sounding funny, when Janeway was talking about when she was like being like, Mr. Paris, you and Mr. Neelix will collect as many vegetables and fruits as you can while we wait for this atmospheric window to open. Mr. Kim, be sure your computer simulations include... Then it weirdly, in the middle of her saying the word include, it cuts to Kes all abruptly. Like, she wasn't even done saying the word include, and it was a weird cut.
Yeah.
And you have to watch that scene again.
Yeah, there's some weird cuts in this.
I mean, I understand when you cut something short to go to another scene, it has an effect, but like, this was like in the middle of a word. I don't know. Mm. What do I know about movies, though, and shows? I don't know anything. I never went to no film school.
Are you saying you know more than Jonathan Frakes?
No. Hell no. Jonathan Frakes rules.
It kind of sounds like you're saying you know more than Jonathan Frakes. You're complaining about his cuts. Actually, he didn't edit the show.
Your world must have very dry literature.
I had no right to push that pasta in your lap. What does that mean?
It is.
B'Elanna, our shuttle's in trouble.
a lot of odd rhythms and cadences this episode. You're absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm.
I like the line. Was it Paris who said he was on an upside down mission to the wrong end of the galaxy?
Yes, I was like,
that's another one of those. That's even 1940s style.
We're on an upside down mission to the wrong side of the galaxy. See? Neelix should have been insulted by that. What is he saying? Neelix lives on the wrong side of the galaxy.
Yeah. Well, he was pretty insulting to Neelix throughout the episode.
I would say Neelix was more insulting to Paris. Well, that's what I've been saying. Yeah. Okay, so here's
Neelix was more aggressive. Paris has got that tongue. You know, well, he's got that silver
I think he can't help it. That's just how he is or something. When he's telling him about getting a B- in some kind of class he was taking, and then in survival, that's what it was, some kind of survival. Neelix was that, like, that's not encouraging. And Paris says, my father was teaching the class that year, and Neelix says, and he gave you a B-? I guess he didn't play favorites, huh? And then that pissed Paris off. Paris looked pissed off by that, and I don't know why he would be pissed off, because that's true. It was true. If his dad gave you a your dad gave you a B-, he's obviously not playing favorites.
Maybe he is playing favorites and the B- is the best he could do. That you did so shitty that he could only bring you up to a B- without causing negative attention.
Well, if that's the way Paris took it, then Paris has a low self-esteem.
Well,
he must be insecure.
He might have some daddy issues.
The theme of this episode is insecurity.
It is. It is insecurity. Mostly.
So it doesn't matter, does it?
Mostly from Neelix Monster, but a little bit from Paris Monster.
I couldn't tell if the enemy ship was way smaller than Voyager or if the perspective was fucking with me.
I think it was pretty small. It was also super CGI-y compared to Voyager. You know, because I know Voyager, they also used models and, you know, they were using more and more CGI, but the production design is excellent. I thought it was, the planet was really cool. Like all that fog stuff was particularly fun to see them walking around, and it looked nice and alien. And again, in that interview I was reading with Ethan Phillips, I think he was talking about how it was very fun and atmospheric, and Jonathan Frakes made it a fun set, but because of the makeup appliances and stuff, and because of the fog, the fog, they can't keep the air conditioning as low because otherwise the fog doesn't work. No, so then it gets hot, and he's wearing all this horrible stuff on his fucking face, and that's hot.
It's not breathing. Yeah. I don't think it's breathing.
Oh my God. Poor baby. Yeah. Well, in that case, he was referring to his skin.
Yeah, right. His skin wasn't breathing. Is that what you were saying?
Yes, his skin, yeah.
His skin wasn't breathing.
Yeah, that's the joke.
Yeah, that's the joke. Did you notice in the cave they found the lizard the bird lizard people tracks, but they looked just like normal shoes? Did you see that part? When they found their footprint. They found their footprint, it wasn't like some kind of like clawed footprint. It was like a normal boot. Yeah. It wasn't like some kind of three-toed boot or something. It was like a normal person boot. Oh, go back and watch.
Oh, so the alien monster creatures with the bird faces just have regular old human feet.
Yeah, just normal feet.
Well, I guess they couldn't afford the foot prop.
The foot prop.
Yeah, gonna get a special foot prop.
There was one line.
Oh no.
There was one line.
Is it a duty or no duty?
Oh, I do have a duty or no duty. I do have a duty or no duty.
Oh good. There's a duty or no duty.
And there's a that's an order too.
I was going to ask if there's a that's an order, because I think there was a that's an order. I remember the that's an order.
Yeah.
I remember exactly where the that's an order was.
Mm-hmm.
Does the audience remember?
Does anybody remember?
Well, you're going to play the tape eventually. But maybe not yet. Maybe you're doing duty or no duty first.
Well, there was one that when she goes like this.
Mr. Kim, that's not an answer I can live with.
Because she's like, can we go through the thing before the thing happens? He's like, I think so. And then she's like, I don't know if I can live with that answer. He goes, I'll try to get you a better one, Captain. Is it just me, or was Harry giving her a little bit of attitude there?
I think a little bit.
He was giving her a little bit of attitude, I thought. A little bit, you know?
But yeah, his friend is lost, as well as the guy who makes the hair pasta.
The hair pasta man. There was another part that I can't remember off the... Oh yeah, here it is. The atmospheric window. The atmospheric, when they were trying to get beamed out, and Neelix was like being like, hey, we gotta hang back, hey. And they were
classic
like...
Classic atmospheric window shenanigans.
They said the atmospheric window closes in 6 minutes. Then Janeway's like, how much time do we have? Even though they said it closes in 6 minutes, Harry was like, we only have 1 minute and 10 seconds, which was confusing to me.
That is confusing.
Because if it's closing in 6 minutes, maybe they need to get there a little early, maybe say 5 minutes and 30 seconds, but really it closes in 6 minutes, therefore they have 1 minute and 10 seconds max. Mm. Didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it's completely crazy.
It's just, we'll never know what it was supposed to be.
Undermines the entire plot of the episode.
That's not true. Tom and I enjoy each other's company. Tom and I enjoy each other's company. We're friends.
Okay, so
duty or no duty?
We got a duty or no duty.
Okay.
All right. I wish Jesse were here.
Yeah, well, he's not, so he misses out on the duty or no duty.
He'll have to write in.
Yeah, he can listen in and then write in.
Okay.
Next week. Or he can just tell us next week.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here we go. Duty or no duty.
As your flight instructor, it's my duty to prepare you for anything, fair or not. It's my duty to...
It's a no duty.
It's my duty to...
Because it's a duty, so I think it's a no-duty.
It's my duty to...
Okay, interesting. I say it's a total duty.
You think it's a duty?
I think it's a duty. But
man,
but fair enough. You say
it's... That's some odd ears, buddy.
I think you have some odd ears. That's
maybe
the,
I do.
That's the beauty of duty or no duty. The beauty of duty or no duty is that... Is that you can hear something different. It's like that, what was that word that they say that sounds...
Hakuna Matata?
No, it's like, it's all like rip-rop or something, and it sounds like blop-blorp to someone else.
Are you talking about the purple dress?
Yeah, but it's with words.
And the gold dress?
Yeah, there's a purple dress, gold dress, but this is with words. Like, somebody says, like, some people hear rip-rop, and the other people hear bloop-blorp. You know what I mean?
No, but I believe you.
Okay, here's a that's an order.
Okay.
I don't usually record Dats and Orders, but I did this time.
All right. Well, thanks for letting us know.
Commander Chakotay will discuss operating protocols with you at the earliest opportunity. In the meantime, no more eavesdropping, Doctor.
But Captain, I...
That's an order.
I think I can accept that. It's on the edge. I really don't like it, but I think it kind of
I was actually
okay.
thinking, wasn't there another part where Tom Paris orders Neelix?
Oh, yes.
Did he say that's an order?
I know.
But he might not say that's an order.
He doesn't. I know what you're talking about. Because, yeah. Neelix goes, you're the commander of this mission. You can make any suggestion you want. And if you make it an order, I'll even have to obey it. And then later Neelix is like, yeah. Is that an order or a suggestion? And Paris goes, an order.
Yeah.
That one I don't think counts because like Neelix was asking him a question and he just answered.
All right.
But this one that I just played, it wasn't like overly dramatic. And like she was saying it to punctuate the statement because he didn't fucking listen to her the first time.
Why don't you play it one more time just so we can have clarity on that.
I love clarity.
Commander Chakotay will discuss operating protocols with you at the earliest opportunity. In the meantime... No more eavesdropping, Doctor.
But Captain, I...
That's an order.
He's a peeping Tom.
Sorry, I just love that.
Starfleet protocol.
That was a setup.
All right. Any other bits and bobs?
Boobs and beebs, barbs and barbs, barbs and boobs and barbs and boobs, beezies, booze and a booze and a booze. Let's play with your blobs.
I enjoy this episode. It's silly.
It's all right.
It's very
good.
It's by the numbers. It's three men and a baby mixed with a few other things.
They needed more baby shenanigans, though. It mostly was just keep baby from dying.
Yeah, and which is sort of depressing. And then, and briefly, baby's dead.
Yeah, right.
Ethan Phillips and Robert Duncan McNeil, they are charming together. My understanding is this is the first time they really got to have any sort of extended scenes together, and it's they have a lot of chemistry. It just looks like they enjoy each other's company and just fed off of each other very well. So I think. The enjoyment of this episode relies on the fact that it's fun to watch these actors do their thing.
At one point, Neelix was talking about Paris's faux lime aftershave. I don't think I've even heard of lime aftershave, but I've never used aftershave, so I don't know anything about it. But like lime aftershave, I don't know.
I used to use Jupe in college.
But was that lime?
Only occasionally. No, it was not lime.
And that goes in your hair, doesn't it?
No, not Jupe. You're probably thinking of something else.
Of Glorp.
Yes.
I'm thinking of Glorp.
You're thinking of mousse. Chocolate mousse, you know? Like in the 80s, you'd put chocolate mousse in your
hair. I've used a pomade before, only once or twice.
Well, you got to use pomade from time to time, yeah.
It wasn't like old school greasy head.
No, it's the new style.
It's like the very light. Just all it does is, I just want enough to keep my hair from getting all nutsoid. But now my hair's long enough, I can just use a hair tie.
Why don't we do a podcast where we try out different pomades?
And we eat them. We see which one tastes the best.
All right. So I'm going to take that as a signal that you have nothing else to contribute with regard to the discussion of this particular episode. I have nothing else to contribute. I did enjoy the episode.
Junk.
For the reasons
junk.
I sprinkled throughout this discussion. Jesse can't tell us what's up because a giant COVID crawled up his back and... grabbed him and ended the Zoom call.
And he didn't come back. And he's not returning the call.
No.
I'm actually a little worried about him.
No, he's fine, but the COVID got him. he's okay. Going to have to sleep off that COVID.
Sleep off the vid.
But he can regale us with the tale of his battle next week.
When Neelix and Paris got in the fight as they were leaving the room, if you look in the background, like all the people in the crowd were like laughing at them.
Yeah, well, I know, because they're acting like children.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Good extras game in this episode.
Extras game?
On the Voyager. Oh, yeah. In the mess hall and stuff. There's just like, good acting by the supporting and people in the background.
I mentioned it briefly, but I want to actually, I'm curious. I was curious when Harry Kim was like, listen, why don't we take in a holodeck program later, a Molière comedy, that'll cheer you up. Is that because does Paris like Molière comedies for the same reason he likes Dr. Zappentron or whatever? Is it because he's like,
yes, Dr. Zappentron.
Is it because he likes ancient entertainment or something like
Tom Paris is into
because it just seems
stuff.
Kind of arbitrary that like he's into Molière comedy,
yeah,
like that specifically.
Yeah. What are you gonna do?
But I can only think it's the same reason he likes the the Laser Man show.
Yeah.
Was it called?
Yeah, Dr. Zappantron.
Zappantron.
Dr. Zappantron and his wacky blats.
Zappantron. So I guess it's just like he likes all kinds of old school ass entertainment. He needs a TV in his room. That's what he needs.
Yeah, he does. And we need to conclude this podcast. So
we do?
Yes.
What for?
Because it's time to go. It's time to end the podcast, send these people back to the next podcast in their playlist. And they can listen to more of us next week, or if they're really fucking eager, we have a whole back catalog. And by the way, you can also go to the Patreon and get brand new stuff. It'd be you wouldn't have heard it before. It's all new stuff.
What good fortune.
If you go get the Patreon stuff. That's patreon.com/itsgotstartrek.
Hey, don't knock it if you haven't tried it.
The website is www.itsgotstartrek.com. One good thing about the website is you can sort by series.
So Starfleet Protocol.
If you want to hear our coverage of a particular series,
would anyone care to explain?
You can click on it, and any shows we've done in that series will pop up.
Why?
Right there. We wish everybody a good past tense day by the time you hear this, if the world still exists and hasn't descended into just a total worldwide riots.
What the hell are you doing?
Then we wish you well.
Did you hear what I just said, Mr. Neelix?
Feedback at itsgotstartrek.com for emails.
I'll kill you!
At It's Got Star Trek.
I don't like it.
On all the social medias, the Mastodons and the Blue Skies and the Twitters and the...
I'm not willing to concede that yet.
Facebook, YouTube. If you like listening to podcasts while watching a static image, subscribe to us on YouTube. And don't forget, if you write a review, you get a haiku.
Hey.
From Dan.
Hey.
So keep them coming. Keep those reviews coming. And Dan will write a haiku.
Yes.
All right, so that does it for us this week. We don't know what we'll talk about next week, but you can check our website.
Get on it.
Social media, we'll figure it out. And talk to you then. Bye-bye.
Exposure to these vapors is too dangerous. We're leaving. Something bothering you, Paris? Oh, Harry. I'm in trouble.
What's new?
I think I'm in love.
What's new?
With Kes.
Kes.
I know. I never even saw it coming. I thought we were just good buddies. But there she was in my arms.
Your arms, Paris? You didn't.
What? Oh, no. I didn't. I wouldn't. She stumbled during a flight simulation. I caught her. I held her for an instant. Are you gonna play or not?